Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday, everybody. Get your requests in. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. We're doing an abbreviated movie review this week, since it is Tuesday. The two guys can't join me this week. They're not available. So I'm just going to tell you about a couple of movies that I saw over the weekend, and we'll go over the box office as well. And if you saw anything and you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. I saw two movies over the weekend. The two that I did not see that were also big was The Legend of Tarzan, which made $38 million, came in second. I'm kind of surprised that it made that much money. I don't know why. Esmeralda, did you have any interest in the Tarzan movie?
I did see that it looked different from the stories that I know about Tarzan.
Yeah.
So
I was a little.
You know what? I'll rent it.
I was a little put off by the fact that he's running around the jungle in khakis. I have no idea why that didn't sit right with me. I was like, why is Tarzan running around in khakis?
Do you want the loincloth?
Yeah, man.
Short loincloth.
Absolutely. You got to have Tarzan in the loincloth. Khakis.
Well, maybe he's a vegan Tarzan.
Well.
He's not skinning animals.
He's a vegan Tarzan.
Yeah, you only eat vegetables.
The setup for this movie, though, is, you know, he goes to England, you know, and, you know, becomes civilized, but then has to go back to the jungle, and he goes back to the jungle wearing khakis. So that's why he's got khakis on, because he came from, you know, Victorian England.
Oh, well, he's also, you know.
Yeah.
He's
stylish.
He feels shame now.
He feels shame because of the loincloth.
Right. Because not, you know, just amongst animals. Now he understands, oh, no, we all have to wear pants.
Yes. Okay. Well, it made $38 million over the weekend, which is a pretty good amount of money. I didn't expect it to do that well. I really didn't. And then The Purge, Election Year, I also didn't see. And these movies make a lot of money. $30 million that movie made over the weekend, which is very, very impressive, considering the other two sucked. And it's such a great idea for a movie, though. Like, it's such a good premise, like a really interesting premise where you could do so much with it. The idea being, have you seen any of the Purge movies, Esmeralda?
I haven't. They look really hokey.
Yeah, they're bad. They're not good. Dan, have you ever seen a Purge movie?
No, I haven't seen any in its entirety.
It's you know, because the idea is pretty cool. It's an interesting sort of sci-fi idea where that one night a year for 12 hours, all crime, including murder, is legal. And, you know, just people go nuts. They start killing everybody. And, you know, and then the rest of the year, the crime is down big time. So that's the idea. Now, the first movie, which is with Ethan Hawke, which I was really kind of excited to see. I went to see it, and it just turned out to be a home invasion movie where they take in a homeless person who was about to be killed, and they stay in the house and lock it up. And then basically there are people trying to get into the house. And home invasion movies freak me out anyway because that's just a personal phobia thing I have. But this one I thought was just such a wasted premise. Like, you've got this really great premise where you could maybe get political, you know, talk about morals, talk about consequences of death, and talk about crime, and do it in a really interesting way. And yet, if you want to show, you know, visceral action and violence and stuff, you can get away with it. But they threw this great idea out the window. And then the second one was just a complete mess. And now the third one, I guess, is the best of the three so far. Eric Childress tweeted out, by the time they get to the fifth Purge movies, maybe they'll get it right. So I guess it's getting better. They're about two movies away from being good. Is what it sounds like to me. So I didn't see that. That made $30 million over the weekend. But the big movie over the weekend, again, is Finding Dory. This thing is just chugging along. Almost $42 million over the weekend. It's up to $373 million already and well on its way to being the most profitable animated film ever made. It's actually going to make more money than Nemo. I think at this point it already has, or it's close to taking over where Nemo made. So it's already made more money than Nemo. And people are loving it. I liked it. I didn't love it. I mean, I liked it. It was good. Not one of the best of the Pixar films, but good nonetheless. That's the things that... So the top three in the country, Finding Dory with $41 million, Legend of Tarzan with $38 million, and The Purge with $30 million, and then pulling up in fourth place, is the BFG, which made a resoundingly disappointing $19 million. I think one of the lowest Spielberg openings of all time. I went to see it. My parents and I went to see it on Saturday evening at like 5:30 in IMAX 3D. Besides my folks and me, 12 people in the audience. I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. I couldn't believe it. And I'll review that one. I saw that. I'll review that one. And I also saw Swiss Army Man, which is an interesting movie, to say the least. Esmeralda, have you seen the trailers?
I've seen the trailers. I want to see it.
You should see it. Yeah. Yeah. I got a feeling that V'll really like it. I have a feeling that this is going to be like something he's going to dig.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, you guys, I think it's very enjoyable. If you get a chance, check it out. So, I'm going to give you the full review. We'll talk a little bit more about the box office. If you got text or you want to call, it's a little looser tonight. No Colin, no Eric. So I'm opening up the phone lines, and it's not going to be as long as it usually is when we dedicate all the time to the movies as we do every Sunday night, Monday morning. So, all right, we'll take a quick break here. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. The news is up next. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Tuesday. Two for Tuesday here. Get your requests in now. Dan, are the requests coming in?
Yes, we've got a couple good ones.
Okay, cool. You know, that one artist, two songs, two for Tuesday. You pick the music that we hear coming back from commercials and such. And 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, Colin and Eric couldn't join me this week, so I'm going to handle it solo. I got a couple of movies that I'm going to talk about that I saw. And let me round out the box office. Finding Dory was number one with $41.9 million. Number two is The Legend of Tarzan with $38 million. The Purge comes in third with $30 million. The BFG, $19 million, considered a massive disappointment at the box office. Independence Day Resurgence with $16 million, bringing its total up to $72 million, one of the biggest bombs of the year. Central Intelligence, The Rock and Kevin Hart movie, $12.3 million, bringing its total up to almost $92 million, so that's a solid hit. Number seven is The Shallows, $9 million, bringing its total up to $35 million. It didn't cost a lot of money to make that movie, so it's going to have a tidy little profit. Number eight is Free State of Jones with Matthew McConaughey, $4 million. Number nine, The Conjuring 2, it's almost up to $100 million already. And Now You See Me 2 comes in at number 10, and it's grossed considerably less than the original movie. Well, let me quickly tell you about Swiss Army Man. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with what this movie is, it's about a guy who is on an island, a deserted island, and he is destitute. He's played by Paul Dano, by the way. Paul Dano, I think, is his best performance since There Will Be Blood. He's really great in this movie, and it's his best work since There Will Be Blood. Anyway, he's about to kill himself. He can't handle it anymore. Being on this island all alone. He's lonely and, you know, and destitute, very sad, missing his friends and family and girl, and decides he's going to kill himself. So he's about to hang himself when he looks and he sees on the beach a dead body has washed up on the beach. And this dead body is played by Daniel Radcliffe from the Harry Potter movies. And he begins a friendship with this dead body, this very, very, very flatulent dead body. The massive amount of fart material in this movie is pretty astounding. And I want to get to that as well, because the BFG, and if you saw the BFG has some of the most elaborately staged fart jokes Spielberg has ever done. I was kind of shocked at the amount of special effects and material that were dedicated to fart jokes in the BFG. So this is the weekend. The two movies I saw this weekend were very heavily into farts. There's a lot of flatulence going on in the theaters this weekend. So anyway, this Paul Dano has this relationship with this dead guy who, in his mind, he can talk. They do crazy adventure things. He uses his body and the flatulence to do certain things. And it's a fantasy movie. It's got a very, very crazy edge to it. It's very, very inspired heavily by Charlie Kaufman and you know, that kind of sensibility. The guys who directed it are a guy named Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert. And this is their first feature. They've done some shorts, and they bill themselves as the Daniels, so that because they're both named Daniel, so they that's how they're the credit reads, a film by the Daniels, and they make a pretty interesting and fun debut here, featuring two great performances, and Radcliffe is terrific in the movie. I you would think, oh, he's playing a dead guy. But he's very, very good in it. There's a lot of crazy stuff that has to happen. And physically, he does some wonderful stuff. His facial expressions are pretty priceless in this movie. And the interaction between him and Dano is great. And the fantasy sequences all work. I like this movie. I liked it a lot. Some people have issues with the final third, the ending of the movie. And I can understand that. It doesn't end quite as on a high note as it begins the first couple of thirds of the movie. So I can understand it. I'm still recommending it very highly, in fact. I think it's one of the better movies I've seen all year. It's certainly the most original thing out there. I mean, you know, everything is a sequel. You know, I mean, look, the top three movies in the country right now are Finding Dory, The Legend of Tarzan, and The Purge, Election Year. Those are all sequels. I mean, Tarzan's not really a sequel, but it's, you know, they've made 7,000 Tarzan movies. So, and then you've got Independence Day, you know, which is a sequel. The Conjuring 2, which is a sequel. So there's a lot of stuff out there right now that's not original. So if you're looking for something original, you're not going to get more original than Swiss Army Man. You just, now, whether or not you go with it, whether or not you like it, that's a whole nother issue. It's a very strange movie. I mean, I described the plot to you and some of the things that happened, and that should be enough for you to figure out whether or not you're on board, whether you want to see this movie, you're going to spend $12 to see this movie. I would. So, yeah, Swiss Army Man, easily the best movie that came out this week that I saw. So, now, The BFG is Steven Spielberg's latest movie. It's based on Roald Dahl's book. Roald Dahl, famous writer of crazy children's stories and dark and twisted stuff. He is responsible for, he wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That's what he's best known for, which eventually became the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which eventually became the better movie, in my opinion, of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the Tim Burton, Johnny Depp version, which I like better. And I know that that's, people right now are screaming at their phones. Well, yeah, if they're listening on their phone or screaming at their radio saying, what's the matter with you? I think Tim Burton's version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is better than Willy Wonka. And you know, I was 5 when Willy Wonka came out, so it's a movie. It wasn't a movie that was a big part of my childhood, because it was. And it's not like I don't love Gene Wilder, because I do. And it's not that I don't like the movie, because I do. I just think that Tim Burton's version is far more Roald Dahl-like. And, you know, much more faithful to the original material. And it doesn't have terrible songs. And the Willy Wonka has terrible songs. There are terrible songs in that movie. Just really bad songs. So, anyway, Roald Dahl is known as... have you guys ever read... Dan, have you ever read any Roald Dahl?
No, I haven't.
Esmeralda, have you?
I've read some of his short stories.
Mm-hmm. He's got a very distinctive style.
Oh, and Matilda.
Oh, Matilda, that's right. How can I forget about Matilda? And you know that Danny DeVito made a good movie out of that.
Yeah.
Real good movie out of that. So, yeah, Matilda's a good one as well. But he's got a very distinctive style, and it's dark, and it's weird. Do you guys remember? No, you're not going to remember. You're too young. But after Saturday Night Live, people who are around my age will remember this. There was an anthology TV series. It was syndicated, and it would come on after Saturday Night Live. Because in Saturday Night Live in the 70s, the stuff that would follow it would be early SCTV. When SCTV was coming out of Canada, it was only a half an hour long. They would run that after Saturday. So it would be Saturday Night Live and then SCTV. And then they would run Bonkers, which was the Hudson Brothers. They were a very popular... You guys don't remember the Hudson Brothers. The Hudson Brothers were, at some point in the 70s, they were very popular. They were three guys, three Hudson Brothers, and they would sing songs and do wacky skits. In fact, one of them is Kate Hudson's dad. He was married to Goldie Hawn for a while. And I can't remember which one. One of the Hudson Brothers is her dad. And they did this show. They had this show that was syndicated called Bonkers, because it was bonkers. They would do wacky sketches and then do wacky songs. So that was on after Saturday Night Live. And then they would have this Roald Dahl show. And I remember the, I can't remember the name of the show, but it was like Roald Dahl's, you know, Tales of Unexpected, maybe Tales of the Unexpected or Tales of Weirdness or whatever. And I remember the opening credits on it was like a weird merry-go-round with like scary lurking horses and stuff on it. And I guess either Roald Dahl wrote a bunch of the stories or at least put his name on it. He would introduce the stories. So it was an anthology series with these weird Roald Dahl-influenced stories that would come on. It was like, you know, Tales from the Crypt, like that kind of stuff. It would be a different story every week.
Tales of the Unexpected?
Yeah. I think that's what it is. I'm pretty sure. It's called Roald Dahl's Tales of the Unexpected, right? And it is the 70s?
Between 79 and 88.
Okay. Wow, it was on that long? Wow. So that used to run after SNL. So I would watch that all the time. And, obviously growing up as a Roald Dahl fan is, you know, part of what I liked. Now, so I was looking forward to this BFG movie. And the plot, and I'll tell you quickly about it. We'll take a break and then I'll give you my thoughts on it. And if you have any texts or anything you want to get in here, it's 312-981-7200. The plot is this. There's a young girl. She's an orphan. Her name is Sophie, played by Ruby Barnhill, who I've never seen in a movie before. She's fine in the movie. She's good. Not a great, you know, child performance, but not incredibly annoying as some child performers can be. And she hates the orphanage that she lives in. She freaks out at night, can't sleep. She's got a cat with her. And one night, in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, she hears some noise out in the street. And the orphanage is located down this brick street from a pub. So there's a lot of drunks who come out of the pub in the middle of the night and wake her up and stuff. And so she's out there looking and screaming at these drunks to get out of the street. And all of a sudden she sees a giant who's just kind of roaming around. And that giant is played by Mark Rylance underneath a lot of CGI effects. And he is a giant, sees the little girl and grabs her and takes her to Giant Land. Like grabs her, takes her and runs across and takes her to Giantland because he's concerned that she saw him and is going to tell everybody, so now she's got to stay with him forever. Now, the other thing is, in Giantland, there are 9 other giants, and they all eat kids. That's what they do. They eat children. This is a Roald Dahl story, by the way. So they eat children, but not this giant. He's a big, friendly giant, the BFG. So he will not eat the little girl and protects her from those giants. He is also a guy who catches dreams and is responsible for giving dreams to children and families. It's a very convoluted story, but that's what he was doing in England, running around in the middle of the night. He goes to people's windows and he blows dreams into them. And then they have dreams. So he catches dreams, cultivates them, and gives them to people. That's what he does for a living. And he's the only giant in Giantland. Who, by the way, they call him Runt because he's a little giant compared to the other giants. And he refuses to eat children. And it's a relationship between these two people, the little girl and the big friendly giant, and how she's, you know, they're going to try and keep her safe from the other giants who will eat the kids. And they actually, at one point, look for the help of the Queen of England to put a stop to this. So that's as far as I'm going to go with the plot. The plot is crazy. When I come back, I'll tell you what I thought of it and some of the highlights. And if you saw it and you want to text, nobody saw it, but I'm sure that not one person who's listening saw it, judging by the fact that on a Saturday evening, there were 12 people in the IMAX theater when we went to see it. So 312-981-7200, a brief movie review segment here. I'll tell you all about the BFG and what I thought of it after we take a break. And then coming up after 3 o'clock, John Baxter is going to join us, a writer of many, many things. And we'll talk to him as well. All right, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah. Get your requests in, 312-981-7200. A little abbreviated version of movie reviews this morning. Because of the holiday, Colin and Eric weren't able to join me, so I'm handling the couple of movies that I reviewed this week. And I'm talking about the BFG, which is Steven Spielberg's latest movie, which really tanked at the box office over the weekend. That's something to talk about, about the fact that this is a big Spielberg movie, big budget, special effects all over the place, Spielberg film that did really, really horribly over the weekend. So I was telling you about the plot. A little orphan girl becomes friends with a giant, and they enlist the help of the Queen of England to help get rid of the giants, the bad giants that like to eat people. And some of the giant voices are provided by Jemaine Clement, who from Flight of the Conchords. He's flesh lump eater is his name, and he's like the big giant that really is, he's evil and he really wants to eat the kids and all that stuff. Bill Hader is one of the voices of the giants, and I couldn't make out which one was which. Now, Mark Rylance plays the BFG, and oddly, it's a very expressive performance. His face is CGI'd. They make the effects so it distorts his face, makes his nose bigger, and his chin weird size, and his ears oversized. But there is enough humanity in Mark Rylance's performance where you can actually see the actor working. Now, the movie's a mess. It's not, the tone is crazy. It switches from being sweet to weird on a dime. The whole second part of the movie, or the final third of the movie, involving the visit to the Queen's castle, is just weird, and it doesn't really work. And as I mentioned before, there is an extended, massively constructed series of fart jokes that take place when the BFG and the little girl visit the Queen. The stuff with the Queen, the tone is very weird. Penelope Wilton, who plays the Queen, plays it really strangely over the top, and the material is weird, and it just takes a, at that point in the movie, it takes a very unfortunate turn. It becomes, like, the last half hour of the movie is just, you know, pretty ridiculous. Now, there are things in the movie that I enjoyed, things in the movie that I think were great. There are sequences, special effects and action sequences in the movie that are beautifully done. Janusz Kaminski, who is Spielberg's regular cinematographer, does a remarkable job, with this movie. Spielberg's, really choreographed some incredible action sequences and some really wonderful, complicated long takes filled with special effects and movement that are really, really nice. So technically, there's a lot of great stuff going on in this movie, from the effects to some of the action sequences. Then there is Mark Rylance, and Mark Rylance is great in this movie. It is a great, great, wonderful performance. It's so good. He's so good in the movie that I would almost recommend it. Almost. But this movie is a mess. It is a mess. And Melissa Matheson wrote it. She passed away years ago. She wrote E.T. She was once married to Harrison Ford. And before she passed away, she finished the screenplay for this movie, and the movie is dedicated to her. And it's very, I guess it's very, very close to what Dahl wrote. And the estate approves of the movie, and I guess Spielberg went as close to the material as possible here. It's just, I guess the material's not that great. It's confused and weird. But again, some wonderful special effects, some good action sequences, and a tremendous performance by Mark Rylance. Mark Rylance, for people who don't know, he's been acting forever, this guy. I mean, on stage and in film. Around the world. He won the Academy Award for last year for Best Supporting Actor. He beat Stallone, if you guys remember. Stallone was up for Creed. And Mark Rylance won for Bridge of Spies. And he was great in Bridge of Spies. And he is a great actor. And he's great as the BFG. He actually is able to emote and create a memorable character through all the CGI and the distortion of his face and all that stuff. So he's great in it. The movie's not very good, though. So I was disappointed with it, and boy, oh boy, did it not do well at the box office. But, boy, that Mark Rylance is a good actor. So a couple of texts came in. 630 area code says, Swiss Army sounds awesome. I'll be looking forward to it. In terms of future movies, I'm looking forward to Suicide Squad, but don't have my hopes up too long. It took too long to get to the screen. You know, as I was telling you, Dan, it's not a good sign because Suicide Squad 1 is PG-13. I mean, you would think after Deadpool, the success of Deadpool, that they'd go for it.
Right.
And it's 100 minutes.
Right.
And there's 26 characters that they have to introduce.
Right.
So, and now you're a fan, right, of Suicide Squad?
I'm a fan of the comic book, but I don't know, just it's got that same feeling as with Batman Superman. There's just something wrong. It just feels like something wrong. The fact that it's 100 minutes actually makes me feel a little more confident that it isn't overbloated, and it's like,
yeah,
we're not going to spend 15 minutes on everybody's origin. We're just going to show you that these are all bad people, and then we're going to throw them into the blender.
Yeah.
But yeah, the PG-13, because you figure, like, if you, that's a naturally harsh movie, you know, you've got hardened criminals doing, you know, awful things. Literally, this movie's called Suicide Squad, so obviously it's not going to be a gentler, kindlier superhero film. So the fact they couldn't bump it up to R, or they didn't have scenes that, you know, you would figure it's an R movie that they had to cut to a PG-13,
right,
as opposed to a PG-13 movie that they can't bump to an R.
And right.
I've heard there's been massive reshoots already and all that stuff.
It's, yeah, the history of the shoot has not been great. But when I saw the trailer for the first time, I was like, well, this is going to be rated R. I mean, for sure. I mean, just looking at what's in the trailer, I was like, this is definitely going to be rated R. So I don't know. And that comes out in August, so we'll see about that. And then 630 area code, BFG suffers from a very uncomfortable name, an unfortunate name. Both my spouse and I guess that the F stood for the F word, and we rarely use profanity in our conversation. I think that is totally on purpose by Roald Dahl. I think that's why he called it that. I think that's kind of the sense of humor that Roald Dahl had. But yes, I understand the BFG. I can't tell you how many people thought it was the big effing giant, but that's not what it is. It's the big friendly giant. But it's so funny how many people, I've heard that complaint from a lot of people, you know, in the world of Facebook. When I was posting that I saw the movie on Saturday, when I posted that I'd seen it, people are like, is that big effing giant? I'm like, no, he's big friendly giant. So I don't know if that title put people off. Maybe it did. Maybe even the title alone stopped people from going to see it. I don't know. So anyway, all right. Big F giant. The BFG. I'm not recommending it. It's not horrible, but it's a mess. And I am recommending Swiss Army Man, which if you want to be adventurous and see something really strange and off the beaten path and a little bit nuts, go see it. Paul Dano and Daniel Radcliffe are both great in it. It's very imaginative, very original. It's the most original movie that's out right now. So. All right, that's the weekend at the movies, and so there you go. 312-981-7200 if you would like to jump in with us at some point. We're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next, and the author of The Perfect Meal and many more books, John Baxter, is going to join us for a conversation. It's all coming up right after the news, which is next.